It doesn't take an extraordinary experience to make health feel like an extraordinary blessing. Even the smallest, most ordinary moments are sacred. It's Mission Radio. Here's Melanie Cole.
Do you know an alcoholic? Do you worry that sometimes you yourself are drinking just a little too much? Alcohol abuse is rampant in this country and worldwide. My guest is Dr. Daniel Hedrick. He's the medical director and co-founder of Mission Pacific Coast Recovery. Welcome to the show, Dr. Dan. Let's speak about alcoholism. It's an epidemic. We see it in some of our loved ones and best friends. How do you identify whether it is yourself or someone else has a true alcohol problem?
Well, the definition of an alcoholic or anybody that's addicted to any substance is that they continue to take a chemical knowing that there's negative consequences after it. That definition fits all of my patients. It has nothing to do with how much they're taking, what drug they're taking, how much they're drinking, or how frequently. But what's unique to an alcoholic is that negative consequences don't stop you. About 20% of the world actually has a biologic attraction to alcohol and a different experience. When they take alcohol, they have this potato chip effect, where they have one, they want a second one. 80% of the world can't relate to that. So most of my patients are actually have a brain that's kind of set up to become addicted easier than other people. I mean, anybody can become addicted if they work at it hard enough. But some people just don't have to work at it.
Okay, so some people have a natural addictive tendency or addictive personality, whether it's chemicals in the brain, family history, whatever. And some people, as you say, have to work at it. They can actually cause their own addiction just by drinking a lot every day.
For years, yeah.
For years, changing their life, it's, you know, it can become such a dysfunctional kind of activity. So what do you do? What do you tell people who come in and say, my spouse is addicted, or my loved one, my best friend, whoever? What do you tell the people who are with that person before we deal with the person themselves?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of coaching, and what we can do starting off is to approach it like any other life-threatening, chronic, treatable but not curable illness, which defines diabetes and arthritis and hypertension, too. Those are life-threatening, chronic relapsing illnesses that there's treatment but no cure. So if we can approach it that way, this is a brain disease. There's a treatment that actually works if you go to it. And if we can just get people in for 3 or 4 days, sometimes we just do an assessment, like especially professionals and other, like we have a special track just for doctors and nurses and airline pilots to be evaluated whether it is. Sometimes it takes a few days. You can't just do it over the phone, and people, we have to watch them and see how, give them some assignments and see how they sleep and eat and interact and do the labs and EKGs and x-rays and all that, and then we can put it together. But there isn't like a blood test that really is black and white. Sometimes it comes down to the patient finally has to decide, like, yeah, I'm really trapped here.
Now, that's huge. Okay, Dr. Dan, that's huge what you just said, because most people, a lot of people that have an alcohol abuse problem will not admit it. They say, I'm fine, leave me alone. You know, I can get it under control anytime that I want. I just don't feel like it. What do you do to get somebody to really give them a big kick in the face and say, yes, this is a problem?
Well, yeah, we have to do it kind of gently when there's certain assignments to evaluate their life and see and really connect the dots. And because the addicted brain is quite intelligent and creative and clever, and it will try to minimize and rationalize and justify all their problems as not related to alcohol at all.
Do ultimatums work, Dr. Dan?
Well, yeah, to get them in the door, there's actually probably, the majority of patients that come in for alcohol don't want to be there. It's the judge or their boss or their spouse at first. And then in a matter of a day and a half or two, for sure, we can kind of break through that. And the peers help. They'll be in with other peers that are a week ahead of them, maybe. And that had the same problem, and they can relate. And a lot of times they come in thinking that they're the only person that has this drinking problem, and they look at it like a weakness. And if you're a real man, you could just learn how to drink in moderation or something. But really, 90% of my patients will never be able to drink socially, because it'll, even if they have years of sobriety, they start drinking socially, they'll be back to drinking alcoholically in a matter of weeks.
And to recognize it in oneself, because as you said, that's one of the more difficult things. If we are looking at ourselves in the mirror, what might we see? I mean, some people are completely functional alcoholics.
Well, that's what they think. But when you interview their spouse, or their kids, or their parents, or their boss, you get a different story. They think they're living in a delusion, actually, a lethal delusion, that drinking isn't killing them or affecting their lives. And most of my patients, it's that point where they come in and their liver is literally dissolving. They have a huge amount of liver particles in their bloodstream, and their heart is being affected, and their immune system is down, their bone marrow is suppressed. But these people aren't going to live very long if they keep drinking what they're drinking. So we really have to break through that denial.
So what's the treatment for alcoholism?
It kind of seems backwards. The first 72 hours, they have this tendency to have withdrawal seizures. I mean, they're grand mal seizures. They're big, you know, flopping on the ground, biting your tongue, have a bowel movement. They're pretty dramatic. So the primary thing that you want to prevent is that, and you use things like Valium, which seems backwards, but it does help you sleep, and it stops seizures. But that's just the first 72-hour window of time. We give them a lot of vitamins, but we get them right into groups. I mean, this is a real aggressive time. Like, ideally, even through your detox, you're attending 10 or 12 classes and lectures and yoga and acupuncture and therapy, doing assignments right through your detox.
Now, is this something that you feel, Dr. Dan, that people must continue for their lifetime? Once an addict, you know, we've heard from AA and the steps, and you must attend meetings and all of these different kinds of techniques. There's so many of them out there, but do you feel that people need to sort of keep on top of it for their entire lives?
Well, yeah, most people, there's a 90-day period of time when they're really doing an emotional roller coaster, and they really have to get obsessed in a certain way, or maybe in a healthy addiction to their recovery, to get through that 90 days when they're doing a lot of brain healing. But still, especially since most of my patients have this genetic setup, or an imbalance even before they took their first drink, they have perfectly good mood centers and craving centers and judgment centers, but they just need more maintenance. Genetic alcoholics, if it runs in your family, they can't afford not to exercise. Just the basic stuff, you know. Like, they can't afford to have poor sleep or be a workaholic. And even negative thinking changes your brain chemistry. They can't afford the luxury of negative thinking even. So, yeah, there's certain maintenance work that is required to keep your – and actually boredom is a really – latest studies are coming out. Genetic alcoholics cannot tolerate boredom. And there's certain people that can, but – you can't afford the luxury of being bored and idle time, things like that.
Well, and as long as you're on those lines of genetic alcoholism and boredom, what about prevention altogether? Is there a way, I mean, if you're genetically predispositioned to become an alcoholic, right there you've given us one tip, avoid boredom. And also don't become a workaholic either, because then you might look toward it for stress relief. What are some prevention techniques you might recommend?
Oh, before they even start drinking?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually learning how, maybe you can phrase it, getting high without a chemical. Our society is programmed to solve everything by taking a chemical. And you can't, I mean, some groups, well, you can't celebrate or have fun without, you know, you can't have a wedding or a party without taking a chemical, which, you know, is unfortunate, because you can. And if we, you know, we used to when we were 10 years old, we knew how to have fun without a chemical, but there's certain groups and cultures and people that are trapped that way.
Well, and I mean, if you look at the Europeans, wine is a big part of almost everything.
Yeah.
You know, and people don't think of them as alcoholics, and yet they have a pretty high alcohol, you know, population. In 20 seconds, please, Dr. Dan, wrap up alcoholism for us.
Well, it's the gateway drug. I mean, if you want to do something to affect adolescent overdoses and this that epidemic, we have to look at alcohol. It's the one that's killing more people because it's leading to the other higher addictive drugs. And it's the one that people, kids are seeing and assuming that, oh, my parents take a chemical to do this. I could take an Oxy, too. They don't know the difference.
So it is definitely a genetic something. It's easy to become addicted to. You can even get yourself there. So this is something, if you know someone, you love someone, get them some help right now. You're listening to Mission Radio. For more information on Mission Hospital, you can go to missionforhealth.com. That's mission, the number 4health.com. This is Melanie Cole. Have a great day. Thanks for listening.